Shalom and welcome everyone to the ICEJ webinar series. I'm David Parsons, Senior Vice President and Spokesman for the International Christian Embassy, coming to you from our Jerusalem headquarters. I'm joined today by our President, Dr. Jürgen Buehler. Good to be with you, Jürgen.
Hi, David. Good to be with you.
And we're going to talk about 2 years of testimony, try and give a wrap of how the ICEJ responded to Israel's longest war, of course, started on the when the Hamas terrorist invaded Southwest Israel on October 7, 2023, and ended while we were here celebrating Sukkot. Jürgen is still since has the war really ended, but the ceasefire has held so far. So we're talking about exactly 2 years of war, which was longer than the War of Independence in 1948. Very difficult, harder in the heartland of Israel. Big, I mean, at one point, big Iranian rockets landing everywhere. So, but we rose to the occasion doing what we could to help this nation. And we've got 3 areas that we want to talk about today. But Jürgen, any comments as we start?
Yeah, you know, when on October 7, it was the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles. 2 days after the last days of the Feast of Tabernacles, we were down in the Gaza envelope, and we had a good turnout of pilgrims that still stood in Israel, and we visited the communities that already then were under heavy rocket fire from Gaza, and we wanted to show them solidarity. None of us had any idea that 2 days later, those streets we were driving with the buses will become killing fields of Hamas. Mm. And the most difficult time in Israel's history was taking place. And it was, you know, Isaac Herzog said this was the darkest hour since World War II, since the Holocaust. But what also we have to say is that during that time, Israel rose to a greatness that none of us have expected. The nation grew together as a one person and as a huge solidarity group. I told my wife sometimes that it feels like the whole land has become a war camp because everybody helps. Housewives helped making food for the soldiers, bringing clothes there. Everybody helped together. But at the same time, we saw a similar solidarity from our Christian friends around the world. And you remember that day where the Lord gave us on day one. Really, I felt it was a heavenly strategy. We told people there are 3 things we feel need to be done. Number one, we need to pray because Israel needs our prayers right now more than ever. Secondly, we need to stand up practically with the nation of Israel, not just pray, but show them that we help them in their practical needs in this war. And thirdly, that we raise our voice in the nations. And I must say, this last 2 years, so strange it might sound, God used those 2 years in a great way to rise up a body among the church around the world to stand with Israel.
Yeah, I remember, you know, we spent a lot of time, our staff and all, preparing for the Feast of Tabernacles, and it's about 2 or 3 months of really busy, and you go into feast mode where you're, and right as it's winding up, you're ready to relax. We had a wonderful time down with the communities, the Israeli communities on the border, introducing some of the local, the mayor of the regional council and all, and 2 days later, he was the first named casualty, Ofer Lipstein. And so this invasion, terror invasion from Gaza, was a shock to the whole nation, but it made it personal for us. And you said Israel's at war, so the ICEJ is at war. I remember when you said that on the first day, when we turned our, you mentioned first prayer, you immediately turned our weekly global prayer gathering. We normally, since the days of COVID, we're doing once a week, every Wednesday, a prayer gathering online, drawing hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of people. But on that day, you said, we're going daily till this war is over. And who knows that it would last 2 years.
We thought it might be a few weeks or maybe 1 or 2 months, but it was 24 months. And what was amazing, it started on Simchat Torah, the last day of the Feast of Tabernacles. And the war ended on the day on Simchat Torah.
Right. So the last 20 living hostages coming out. It was quite amazing.
And it was really, you saw God's hand in all that. You know those global prayer meetings? We started, I think, the first one on the day when the war was coming, it was breaking out. People saw it in the news. I think we had some 1,500 people joining us in the first day. We said we want to do it every day. Honestly, I thought, well, if we have 50 or 100 or 200 people joining us every day, this would be a miracle. And since the war started, I think for the first year straight, we had every prayer meeting more than 1,000 people. And then even at the end now, this year at Simchat Torah, 600-700 people joining us every single day to pray for Israel. That was, I think it was an unprecedented move of prayer. And then you have to think about the global prayer, you know, the Rosh Chodesh prayer that is going on, where people hour by hour, 24/7 prayer was being brought forth. It was really, it birthed a prayer movement that none of us could have imagined.
You had already set the stage. We're going to have a Rosh Chodesh prayer vigil or chain online that goes 24/7 around the world. And we were struggling for a couple of years. It was just growing to fill 10 days, 12 days of a month, and finally a whole month launching each new Hebrew month. And but during the war, it became very easy to fill all 24 hours in a whole month, the whole year round. And the global prayer gathering, Jürgen, I tell you, there were dark days during this war when a lot of people died, even on both sides. You felt the pain, the suffering in the land. And these prayer gatherings where people came on, a lot of them were, we had some well-known ministers, big name ministries on to help us pray and such. But it was mainly grassroots people with a prayer burden for Israel coming every day. It has been very encouraging to me and to us and our staff. We've felt all these prayers.
Yeah, and what amazed us from the time, even when we started with it during COVID, I never in the world could have imagined to do an online prayer meeting and to say, well, let's have a Zoom prayer meeting. I would have said this will never work. And people from around the world, they not only switched in, but they said, well, we feel the presence of God coming in this prayer meeting. And you know, it's a whole new dimension when Jesus says, when two or three are gathered in my name. We realized it doesn't have to be necessarily physically. Of course, that's the best way to do it. But God also came and showed up in those virtual prayer meetings. It was absolutely amazing.
Yeah. I think our data that we've been able to mine from the Zoom program, we've had over 20,000 Christians from more than 100, it's like 187 countries. I think there are only 195 members of the UN. It's almost every nation that's a member of the United Nations. And even people in Antarctica praying with us, it's quite remarkable. And every day, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds joining every single day to pray for Israel, the region, and their own nations. We've been praying for the people of Gaza, but we've been praying especially to get the hostages out. And that was a real victory for us when the last ones came out, 20 of them all in one day.
Yeah, and I do believe also the resounding victories in Lebanon against Hezbollah in Iran. I believe heaven one day, eternity will show how much effect the prayer had on those victories that Israel had against those terror organizations.
Yeah, we prayed for the release of the hostages, for Rahabs, for people on the other side to help Israel, and that has happened. They couldn't have targeted Nasrallah and Hananya, all the Hamas, Hezbollah leaders, everyone, even the Iranians so closely. We prayed for strategies of Israeli leaders to know how to defeat the enemy. I think the prayers for a swift victory, kind of at some point you said this isn't going to be swift, but you look back in the time of 2 years, it actually gave Israel time to one by one really diminish some of these major threats that had built up over the last two decades.
And it was fascinating. We were praying along those lines, and later on you saw things unfolding on the ground. It was really amazing as you felt. You know, Derek Prince wrote a book called Shaping History Through Prayer and Fasting. And in a way, that's what we experienced over these last 2 years.
Yes, amen. And we don't want to go without mentioning some of our branches. This is what we've been doing from our Jerusalem yes. headquarters. And like our Philippines branch does about 120 hours in the Rosh Chodesh prayer chain. Some of our branches really committed, but a lot of them started their own prayer initiatives during this war. In our USA branch has a prayer vigil that goes through. They have people in all 50 states praying. Our brother Danny in India, all 29 provinces or states of India are involved. Germany's held public prayer rallies out in the open where yeah. all the Islamists are marching. Your brother Godfrey goes there and prays. A lot of good prayer initiatives all around the world.
Sometimes 1,000, 2,000 people coming and show up at this prayer vigils. And even yesterday, he just called me and said, we had a prayer gathering in the area of Stuttgart where 600 people showed and for the single purpose to pray for Israel. I think this was a prayer meeting. It was lasting 5 hours or something like that. That is really, you know, what's interesting to me, when the embassy was established in 1980, the board back then, they defined the bylaws of the ICJ. And I believe every single one of those points, it's more relevant today. Mm-hmm. But the very first one is that we pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And we really have become a prayer movement over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Okay, we also, the second prong of our three-stage response to this war was solidarity with Israel, trying to express it openly, publicly, boldly, wherever we could. I think one of the ways we did it here in Jerusalem that was really, for me, it was enjoyable to have key evangelical ministry leaders from around the world come in some of our solidarity missions to Israel. Of course, our two feasts last year, over 500 Christians from 50 countries. This year, 1,700 Christians from abroad, from 75 nations. Each year, the largest solidarity missions to Israel, our feast alone, Envision, but also some of those special solidarity missions that brought in some wonderful leaders in the body of Christ.
Yeah, and it had a huge impact, especially those solidarity missions, which might have been smaller in scope, but we had some key leaders from Europe, from Asia joining us, from Africa. And we have to give recognition here to Nicole Yoder, our aid department leader, and she established over the last decade, we have to say, excellent contacts to all the communities in the Gaza envelope. So when the war broke out, we had the foot already there on the ground. And I remember times when Israelis were calling us and says, Jürgen, we want to go to the Otef Asa, the Gaza envelope. Can you help us? Because I know
they
couldn't get in, but we could. Yeah. So we took them, we took those leaders to places that were open only, were closed military areas. And this had a huge impact on those leaders when they saw with their own eyes, sometimes the room where there was still blood from the fighting that was going on in Kfar Aza, and the destruction that was going on in those horrible hours of October 7. And it changed their ministry and their life for good. And some of them led to the establishment of very powerful branches that we have today.
I remember 6, 8, 10 months into the war, you're bringing some of these groups down to the border area and you hear explosions and what was that? And you know, it's comforting to tell them, oh, that was outgoing. That was IDF artillery, but we saw massive explosions inside Gaza as well, precision targeting of terrorists. Right while we were there praying on the border, I remember one prayer, a bunch of us standing right at the border fence near Kfar Aza, and you saw this big cloud coming up. It was taking people into a real war zone, but standing boldly in prayer. We also had all these branches around the world engaged in pro-Israel rallies. Mm. We either organized them ourselves or we took part in some of the others. There had to be that joining together of Christians and Jews. I remember in the U.S., our U.S. branch was in Washington for a huge rally, 250,000 or so on the mall in Washington, and that's just one example.
Yeah, and I believe you counted it one day. We had more than 25 or 30 countries where our branches organized those rallies.
That was early in the war.
That was early in the war, yeah.
It's many dozens more now. Quite remarkable.
One of the unique things, you know, about the Christian Embassy is that we are a Jerusalem-based organization, first of all, but we are blessed with branches literally all over the world. Like you said, we had people from 180 nations praying with us, and we saw them rise to the occasion. They really took our challenge. They went out to the streets. Just recently, one of our leaders, I believe it was in a European country, took a document you wrote mm-hmm. about Israel committing genocide, and you disproved it very powerfully with 10 mm-hmm. points. Mm-hmm. And it was taken almost one-on-one and given as a must-read to the opposition leaders in that mm-hmm. country. Mm-hmm. And so we had a coming out from Jerusalem, a huge impact in the nations, you know, Oslo, big rallies from Norway, we had big rallies in Finland, in Germany, you mentioned mm-hmm. that, and of course in many other places, US mm-hmm. and so on.
Yeah, as many of these accusations and such as Israel's committing genocide, we were fighting against that, issuing documents from here, statements against it, going to The Hague and rallying for Israel about a Palestinian mm-hmm. state. But I think it was also important, Jürgen, the teachings that we did to sort of get Christians back into a right mindset about what Israel was facing. And from the start, you really put your finger on the spirit of Amalek and having good, solid biblical teaching on the nature of the spiritual mm-hmm. conflict we were in.
Yeah, it was, I must say, for me personally, really a supernatural season, especially the first weeks of the war. We really felt the Lord was giving us a heavenly download and a revelation. I never before really spoke much about the spirit of Amalek, and the war started, and within a few days I had outlines for 2-3 messages to speak about Amalek, and people told us, this is exactly what's happening, thank you so much for giving us this guidance, you taught about that. And I think the Lord really used us in a great way to mobilize prayer, to educate the church mm-hmm. and to help them. What really encouraged me is that some of the churches, even in China, you know, we saw mm-hmm. them as watching us, maybe one or two people from China at some day, and then they told us, well, actually there are whole networks of churches behind that. They are watching the teaching mm-hmm. and they are praying since then for Israel. So there is an outcome of those teachings that are, one day heaven will show how mm-hmm. many people really were impacted by that.
Yeah, I think some of our messages on Israel over the years, over the decades, I love to teach from the book of Ruth, a very prophetic book about Israel returning from exile and a Ruth church and all. And it's very poetic, very lovely story, a marriage at the end. But is that going to resonate post October 7? And I think, you know, God really gave us a good, strong message about the spirit of Amalek, a spirit of jealousy that causes people to rise up in hostility towards the Jewish people. And Christians have drunk from that poisonous trough for generations, and we shouldn't do it again. And the Muslims are doing it, the left is doing it, even now the American right. So it's a message that has to continue in the days ahead, and also many efforts on explaining the dangers of anti-Semitism, the threat to even the Arab world of radical Islam. These are all very important as we go forward. Yeah,
and maybe if I can add one more thing to that, you know what? One thing that really sold it to me, that it's not just a conflict of political agendas or about mm-hmm. a few square meters of land here or there, but it's really a demonic spiritual battle that was going on. It was within the first week of the war, it was still war zone. It was, you know, you had to go there with helmet and with bulletproof vest. The Knesset gave me the privilege to go down with them and to see with my own eyes the carnage that took place in October 7 and to hear the story. I never forget standing in one spot and a general was talking to us and he pulled my arm. He says, please don't stand there. And I looked puzzled at him. He says, well, you're standing just a few days ago. One of our generals was beheaded by Hamas. And you really saw the demonic nature, things that you never imagined that people would do in our modern time. And you realize this is the gates of hell breaking loose, and it required a spiritual aggressive response from the church. And I believe that's what the Lord gave us. He gave us, in a way, he said we declared war, but it was really a time of spiritual warfare for the ICJ.
Okay. We also, our third area of response, very urgent from the very first moment. We know when things heat up here, we have to go into crisis mode, emergency mode. And we're coming out of the feast. We're already tired, but I tell you, our staff, no one left. Mm-hmm. And everyone got up on their toes and started moving again to start responding.
We gave them the opportunity. We said, you don't have to stay with us because it's a wartime. But like you said, they all stood with us.
I think there was one person, their parents drove them so crazy that they went home for a month or two and then were able to come back. But they did not want to go. It's quite amazing how resilient and brave they have been. And we have worked hard for 2 years in crisis mode that when we look back at this, 2 years of testimony, a lasting testimony of Christian love, care, concern for the nation of Israel in wartime. It started with helping with feeding people who were displaced. There were 60, 70,000 from the Gaza border, also another 60, 70,000 from the northern border because of fears of that Hezbollah, Hamas stole their playbook and came across, invaded, took hostages. That was going to, fear was, that was going to happen in the north. So you got 130,000 or so Israelis who are living in hotels or staying with relatives all over, some in tents even, you know, and having to care for them.
Yeah, we helped them. And also, you know, what was very encouraging that we found that out only weeks after October 7, that the aid that we provided even before October 7, well, you know, there are in every community in Israel, there are first responders for crisis. It might be a forest fire, it might be any type of catastrophe. And we helped those communities, especially in the Gaza envelope, because they were constantly in crisis mode. And we didn't think much when they asked us to ask for a special type of communication device, and said, because sometimes the cellular network is overloaded. And on October, that's exactly what happened on October 7. They couldn't place any calls. But those communities that had those communication devices, they could use them, they could warn their community, especially one in the north of the Gaza envelope. They said that those devices, they literally saved thousands of people's lives in the north because they could give them in time warning.
Yeah, Hamas specifically targeted the wireless towers down along the border, so you couldn't use your cell phones. And because all those the civil security teams in all of those communities had these special Motorola like satellite phones, kind of like Starlink, Elon Musk thing, they were able to communicate. And even the army was calling these guys who had these devices because they were only ones with a real picture of all that was going on. And so that proved the bomb shelters proved helpful. Yeah. The firefighting equipment, everything we'd been doing for years down there. But a real burden for all these families that all of a sudden are living on the other end side of the country. Of course, they're out of harm's way, but the children, I remember visiting hotels that just all the hallways full of children that like cabin fever, and how long are they going to be there? No school, and the parents have lost their jobs. I mean, these people were destitute. But we also did five ambulances that we donated, my goodness, ATVs.
ATVs, and we did we invested a lot into trauma treatment. I think what it's important for our listeners to understand is that today in Israel, they estimate 30 to 40% of the population is in a type of post-trauma status right now, and they need to be treated. And I hear this even from our children going to their school classes, that they are traumatized even though they live out of harm's way in Jerusalem, but even more those who are at the border area. And the ICJ invested a lot in different trauma treatment programs, and it's a blessing, and it's very successful.
Yeah, I think some of the things that stand out for me, we are helping a horse therapy ranch. It's only about 5 miles from the Gaza border, in an area that was invaded on October 7. They were able to get their horse ranch back up, treating people again. Years of treating people for, you know, the trauma from rocket barrages, and now from what happened on October 7, especially the children, sponsoring children in these therapeutic horse rides, and our branches even donated therapeutic horses that I needed them myself, going and meeting Andy and some of these other very gentle horses.
It's I think we all, after those 2 years, we all need them.
Yeah, it's true. And on the ambulances, I you know, I took a special pride. One of the ambulances, I think it cost around $180,000. It was a little more than some that went to Magen David Adom, but this was a special armored ambulance, the bulletproof and all, for military use in the IDF in evacuating people. And some of the hostages coming out of Gaza, even those that first exchange in November of 23, about 6 weeks into the war, the very first hostages that came out of Gaza, some of them rode in one of the ambulances that we had quickly donated. And that, you know, we took a special satisfaction in being involved, even with the bringing out of the hostages.
Yeah, and people need to understand that on October 7, when those terrorists entered into a community, one of the first targets was that they actually completely destroy the ambulances, that there will be no help available. And there were those pictures on televisions about those ambulances that had hundreds of bullet shots, and the tires have been shut down. And that's why we decided we have to provide them with those bulletproof ambulances. And they are still needed today. And like you said, they have been used in many, many, many blessed ways so far.
And we'll talk about it a little more. I really have to hand it to our branches in a lot of different countries that really stepped up to the challenge and raised the urgent funds that were needed to cover so many needs. There were so many requests coming in, you couldn't handle them all. But we also had this special, we not only brought solidarity missions to Israel, we brought hands-on groups. And I think that sort of stands out to me, meeting some of these people. Some were young. There were two twin girls from Zimbabwe that these groups were out there picking fruit because the fruit was rotting on the trees, or the crops rotting in the field. They needed help, and so we were going volunteering, packing meals, picking fruit, doing all sorts of stuff to help people. These two twins from Zimbabwe, I remember going to the hotel to speak to the group one night. And the one says, I have a lion. And the other one says, no, it's my lion. It's so funny, from young folks, you know, these two young girls, twin sisters, so delightful, all the way to older people, retirees who came and were still, I'm telling you, people in their 70s out there working hard 12 hours a day to help Israel. Was quite remarkable.
Yeah, we just had, I think, a few days ago, the last eight teams or hands-on tours were leaving the country. I think we had three in a row. And what really is a blessing for me to hear that one of the organizers, the Israeli organizers who invited them, said, you know, we got a lot of those eight groups who are coming from school classes from Israel and all that, and for them it's a day off and they have fun, and for them it's more taking selfies down on the fields. But he said, but your people coming from the nation, they really work and they really do the job and they accomplish so much more. And that's, I think, a badge of honor for the people who are taking the time, investing money to be here and being here. They really work hard to help those affected communities.
We were really concerned about Holocaust survivors, especially the residents of our 60-some people who live at our home for Holocaust survivors in Haifa. Iran started targeting the port of Haifa, and they had one Iranian missile land around 800 meters to the north, and another a day or so later about 600 meters to the south. So they were right in harm's way, but we built more shelters for them. We got a generator in case their power went out. We donated an ambulance to serve that facility and so much else. More bomb shelters. We've renovated 160 or 70 existing shelters, especially in the north, because they felt vulnerable. There was a lot of Hezbollah rockets coming across. But Jürgen, as we went into the second year of the war, and the IDF was able to push back the Hamas threat from the border, some of the communities there were able to start coming back, and it's a long process, start thinking about rebuilding. And it's here, this second year, thanks to a lot of hard work by our branches, we've been raising a lot of money. We can say it, millions of dollars, to help with some major rebuilding, reconstruction projects to help these communities recover.
No, absolutely. And you know what we have to say also, I mentioned that before, our aid team that we have here on the ground, it is something that is really unique. We have with Nicole Yoder and her team, a team here in the land that is incredibly connected to, I think, almost every community in Israel, be it up in the north with the Druze community, she knows most of the sheikhs there, or being with the IDF or the security first responders there, or the farmers. Everybody knows Nicole, and I think that's one of the strengths of the IDF, of the ICJ, is that we really, as soon as something is happening, you can be sure that our teams are within 24 hours, they are on the ground. I remember when those rockets came down, even down in Tel Aviv from Iran, within, I think it took 2 days. You couldn't go there in the beginning because it was a military closed area, but as soon as it was open, Nicole and her team was there assessing what we can do. That's what she did in the north, and we have been helping to rebuild a lot of the destruction that was taking place during the war.
These communities, I mean, I don't know if I'd be able to move back to my home if someone in my family was killed inside my house. And that's a tough decision, but these are kibbutzim and farming villages, moshavim, that they put a lot of emphasis on communal life. They all eat in a community dining hall, and what they've got to do to draw the families back is to make sure you have that communal life as high quality as you can provide. So the three hardest hit communities, Nir Oz, Kibbutz Be'eri, and Kfar Aza. Nir Oz lost a quarter of their 400 and some people, over 100 dead or taken hostage. They still, half of them have said they're not going back. We're talking to them how we can help, but they're not even in a stage yet where they can even think about it. But the other two, Kibbutz Be'eri and Nir Oz, Kfar Aza, in Kibbutz Be'eri, we are rebuilding the destroyed youth activity center. Hamas terrorists took it over on October 7. So the IDF says, rather than risk lives of soldiers, we're going to flatten it, and we are going in to rebuild this. This is where the kids go in the afternoon while their parents are still working, and have group activities, very important to their life, an elderly care and activity center in Kibbutz Be'eri that include trauma care. In Kfar Aza, renovating their kindergarten into a children's trauma center. And also in Be'eri, an innovative music therapy center. They had a little music hall, but we're going to turn it into a recording studio and using music as therapy. There'll be professionals there treating people. And then we're helping with expand the horse therapy ranch and rebuild their animal corner in the community of Sede Nitzan. We are helping a brand new high school for farming, where students from all over the country are coming in and learning latest farming techniques. We've just built them a new greenhouse classroom, learning center, and classrooms. And also putting in large bomb shelters in some of the new resilience and therapy centers in some of the regional councils. So it's a lot of major unprecedented, we've never had this much.
And I think there's in one of the destroyed medical centers, we are rebuilding an entire dental clinic there.
In Sokharov in Be'er Sheva got hit by Iranian
exactly.
rocket.
And you know what we really have to say, number one, our branches around the world, they really rose to the occasion like we never expected, and even today we have to give a big kudos and a big thank you to all our branches and the supporters from around the world who are making all that possible, and it's still going on. And one thing I want to share as we are ending here is that I had the privilege, I think 2 weeks ago, my wife and I, we went down to the very south, we visited that agricultural center you were speaking about, and the school, Nicole Yoder was, by the way, there just a few days ago, invited to give a lecture and to speak to the students. And I was amazed, you know, this is really the south-south of the Gaza envelope. It's desert area. I expected there will be free roads and a very quiet and a peaceful area. And we saw the roads in both directions packed with cars. And I later
construction one, everywhere.
Yeah, and it's not construction, but private cars also.
Yes.
And I talked to the guy in the agricultural center, said, what's going on? Do you have a holiday or is there a festival or what? He says, no, since October 7, people are investing like crazy in the Otef Asa and the Gaza envelope. And that's something that really strikes me again and again with the Jewish people. They don't say, okay, now we're at October 7, we are never going to move there. Of course, near us and some of the very heavy hit, our friend in Kfar Aza, he says, I probably will not go back there
Shai
anymore.
Hermesh,
yeah, but there are many, many young families that say, well, this is our land, God gave us this land, we want to settle there, we want to build a house there. House prices are going up today in the Otef Asa. Mm-hmm. And this is absolutely amazing. And I'm so thankful that God is using us as Christian Embassy to be a part of this amazing story today.
Yeah, not all the families will go back. Most of them are in like Kibbutz Be'eri, Kfar Aza, but there's a long waiting list if families aren't coming back. There's a whole new neighborhood going up in Kibbutz Be'eri. It's already been working on it for 6-8 months now. And Jürgen, I think the last thing we'll mention on this particular response, what we did to help in practical ways to help this country, the Aliyah to Israel never stopped. Mm. There were still thousands of Jews coming last year and this past year. And the embassy once again helped around 3,000 or so last year, 3,000 this year in 2025. That's always around 10-15% of the number of new immigrants,
yes,
new Jewish immigrants. And we're very on the verge of a big wave, we hope. The Jewish Agency says they expect a million or more, perhaps a million over the next 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. That's a lot, but we're talking even the B'nai Menashe from India are coming. We're involved in that. The Ethiopians,
yes.
France, UK, Soviet Union. That's exciting.
No, and it's amazing, you know, to be alive in those days. It's a time of struggles. It's a time of challenges, huge challenges. But it's at the same time a time where you can really see the hand of God, prophecy being fulfilled in front of our eyes with the Aliyah. And you know, as people are listening to us today, they say, okay, you accomplished a lot over this last 2 years, so it's done now. Let me tell you, those projects are still going on. We are still getting new requests coming in almost every day if we can help with this or that project. So if you are considering making this year a year-end gift, to Israel, please consider the Christian embassy. We have the food on the ground. We make sure also that whatever is taking place, people will understand this is given by Christians from around the world. There will be always a Christian testimony attached to whatever we are doing here in this land.
Amen. We do hope we're able to declare that two-year war over. We're sort of in a new phase of the conflict against Israel. Their enemies aren't going away. We need to still be standing, help this nation recover, and really look towards a much brighter future, much safer future for people in the region. Hopefully some more normalization with Arab countries. We're praying for all this, but it is a most unusual time, and really a time when the Christian help stands out. We have written, with thanks to all the Christians around the world who stood with us, written 2 years of a lasting testimony. Mm-hmm. When it comes to what happened during this war, we have a testimony of the faithfulness of God and the generosity of Christians around the world to help this nation.
Yeah, and let me say one more thing. We didn't plan that to say when we spoke about the program today, but you know, in the middle of the war, I had my own health challenges. I was literally forced by circumstances to leave back to Germany, to go to rehabilitation clinic, to get accustomed to the wheelchair. And of course, this left a vacuum at the Christian Embassy, but this vacuum was incredibly filled by your leadership, David. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was in Germany during those months, and you kept doing the webinars. Mm-hmm. You made sure that those programs were executed. Mm-hmm. And I really owe a great debt also to you personally, mm-hmm, for your leadership over this last 2 years. And really appreciate you at my site here in Jerusalem.
Well, you put together a good team that really everyone carried their weight, and also our branches, kudos to them as well. All our national directors, we could start naming some of them, but really incredible. Even some countries that where people gave extraordinarily, like they hadn't in years and years, mm-hmm, and the most ever, and we're just so thankful for it. Well, that's our time for today on today's ICEJ webinar. We hope you enjoyed this and got a lot from it. And we'll see you next Thursday, 3 p.m. Israel time, coming to you from Jerusalem. God bless you.
God bless you.